Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
I know we plan on talking about it at some point, but I certainly can't wait for the NBA to lock in a plan. For the last 2 weeks, we've heard 19 different plans on how they want to restart the season. Like, baseball, it's one plan. All right, this is how long the regular season's going to be. This is how many playoff teams it's going to be. This is where the games are going to be. We're all moving forward. The NBA, they've just thrown so many different ideas out there. We can certainly talk about them, but I just can't wait till we get to that point. Speaking of baseball, we are honored to be joined by Hall of Fame pitcher Tom Glavine. We'll be on the show coming up in 30 minutes. Tom Glavine will be on the show coming up in 30 minutes. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. So in our post Last Dance world, ESPN is still trying to give us content. So yesterday, instead of having another episode of The Last Dance, they have moved on and they have a new documentary based on Lance Armstrong. He said this in the middle of the 30 for 30.
If I was competing today, I could tell you who my peers would be, right? My peers would be Michael Phelps, LeBron James. And so I see where they are. And so only now do I realize, okay, that's where you were. That's where I was. I really don't miss that. And I think if I'd have stayed there, it wouldn't have been good for my family.
This is my question to you guys, and I want to get into it a little bit. Do you think he's crazy for that statement? Do you think he's crazy for saying at one point he was on the same level as LeBron James and Michael Phelps at the peak of his popularity? Because I don't think he's crazy for saying that. I think it's true. There was a 5-year span. I don't necessarily think it was the first couple, but as we learn more about his story, as Livestrong got bigger, as every teenager and young person had those Livestrong bracelets, as people began to fell in love with the message of perseverance and overcoming the odds, I do think he was on that level of American hero and American superstar, the way that LeBron was, the way that Michael Phelps, the way that Tiger Woods was. I do think that Lance Armstrong was in that category of people in the very beginning.
Yeah, I think it was all. Also, the one thing that I don't believe is that, I mean, why would you not want to be at the peak of your sport and thought of on maybe the Mount Rushmore of athletes from a certain generation? Like, if you're talking about Michael Phelps and Tiger Woods, that's the who's who. That's the these guys have won more than anybody else. And then you're talking about a guy like Lance Armstrong, who at his peak, when all those yellow bracelets were going around like you're talking about, and he was all popular in the cancer survivor story and all of that, I would say that he was as popular as all those other guys. And when you think about the fall that the other guys have had, with Michael Phelps, there was the weed thing, not that big a deal. With Tiger Woods, there was the infidelity thing, a little bit bigger deal. With Lance Armstrong, I can't really think of any athlete, C-Dot, that hit the peaks that he did that also visited the valleys that he once did. Like, he was at one point as popular, if not more popular, I would say, and more recognizable than those guys were. And then he basically became irrelevant.
I mean, I think that part of his story was just bigger than sports, that cancer touches so many people in so many different ways that it's a very relatable story. So if you see someone who overcame cancer and is still at the height of his profession, I could see how that was a very inspirational story. One of the things from The Last Dance that's going to be the lasting image and memory to me is the mental toll of fame. If you remember, I think it was like episode 6, maybe I'm a little bit off here, they started showing Mike at the end of the first run. And Mike was kind of letting people know, hey, I don't know how much longer I can do this. Everybody wants a piece of me. I just want to be by myself. And then you put that in addition to his father passing, I can see why Michael needed a little bit of a mental break. Man, I think the same thing happened to Lance Armstrong, and then added to the fact of you were lying the entire time, that people believed something that just wasn't true. Like, you became such a hero, such an inspiration, and everybody wanted a piece of you, and you became this hero, and the only person that knew you were cheating is you. I can see how that mental toll took a big strain on him, and at some point he's like, man, I just don't want to do this anymore. Like, I am being made to portray a character that's not really who I am.
Another thing about, like, the Michael Phelps comparison is the sport that these guys are playing and achieving at the highest level. I mean, how many other swimmers could you name that year that Michael Phelps was competing against those guys? And now, if I started making you list the name of all the swimmers that you can, maybe you could do three or four. I would say the same thing with cyclists. Like, he was cycling. He was at least American cycling. He was the Tour de France. When it comes to golf, when it comes to other even individual sports, we can name 10, 20, 30 guys that have competed in the sport. But for a while, at least as far as Americans go, Michael Phelps was swimming. As far as Americans go, Lance Armstrong was cycling. And it wasn't necessarily about just those sports, because let's be honest, as Americans, we don't really care about swimming, except every 4 years. We don't really care about cycling, except for if our guys got the yellow jacket on. So the timing was perfect for all these guys, but also Lance Armstrong held on to the lie longer than any athlete that I can remember. Now, you could say, what about Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and Sammy Sosa and all these guys in the steroids era? I feel like the thing that was different maybe with Lance Armstrong is he was on an island. And I'm not saying he was the only one that was cheating, but he was the only cyclist that we knew his name that was also cheating. So you want to talk about pressure, where you're made to be this cancer survivor, this great American, essentially not just an athlete, but also a hero, and you're living with this lie? It was a house of cards that at some point was bound to come down, and it did.
To your point about cycling and soccer and those type of sports, you're right. I don't think America has an interest in those things, but America definitely has an interest in supporting the flag. And if you wrap yourself in American dominance and you do that on the biggest stage, you're always going to get the support. I think what made it different with Lance was he was a movement. It wasn't like, it's not like those wristbands had his name on it. It was Livestrong, and you believe that this $1 that you spent on this wristband, that it was going to go towards fighting cancer. And that's where I think the toll came, and that's why I think it was bigger than that. I would argue he was bigger than Michael Phelps because of it. He was around longer, and his impact was a lot bigger. Was he the athlete that Michael Phelps was? No. But if we're talking of at the height of their popularity, who was bigger, who was more visible, who sort of had the following, I would say Lance was bigger than Michael Phelps during their run.
Let's do a quick over-under. You know how much money those things made? Just the sales of the yellow Livestrong bracelets. How many think they made?
I'm going to guess about $400 million.
Actually, yeah. $470 million since the foundation began since 1997. It became this cultural thing where, I mean, I had one. I'm pretty sure you had
one. Everybody had one.
You really weren't that cool if you didn't have one, especially that was kind of back when you and I were younger. So, again, yeah, like, that's the thing about Lance is Lance went from being at the peak. When Tiger Woods fell off, it was a pretty big fall from grace, but there was always – he could come back, and to some extent he has. Michael Phelps was, for a while, the most popular American athlete in the world, and then all of a sudden he became human and all this stuff. I feel like with Lance Armstrong, it was all or none. It was love or hate, and he went from everybody pointing to him saying, look what this guy does, look what he represents, to literally they had to change the name of the soccer complex in Kansas City because of Livestrong.
So you're talking about being the most popular U.S. athlete and lying, right? Mm-hmm. That's what Lance Armstrong did?
Oh, by far.
I think we're starting to see that maybe Michael Jordan falls in the exact same category. We got to go back and change the name of the documentary. It was not The Last Dance. It was The Last Lie. I don't trust anything from that documentary anymore. How do I even know that he really won those championships? How do I know that those championships are legitimate? I mean, it's been lie after lie. LeBradford Smith, Slim Bowler, Pizzagate. Now the Dream Team? Listen to this audio someone found from 2011 where Mike, during the documentary, swears, I never said I didn't want to play with Isaiah Thomas on the Dream Team. The survey says that was a lie.
And when they called me to ask me to bluff, Rob couldn't call me. He said, Rob, I won't play with Isaiah Thomas on the team. He assured me, he said, you know what? Chuck that one, Isaiah. So Isaiah's not going to be a part of the team.
What was that, recorded on Kevin McAllister's Talk Boy?
This is you guys king? I'm just asking, this is you guys king? A liar? How do we know what's factual from that documentary? I don't know what's factual anymore. Every major part in the story he's either lied about or painted his teammates to be the villain. Horace was the snitch. We're finding out that was a lie. The way he dogged Scotty. The dream team stuff. LeBradford Smith. I had no problem with the glove. Well, the stats said you had a problem with the glove. How can you trust this individual? And this is who you guys have as your king? This is the guy. This is the guy you were telling me is the greatest basketball player of all time. This is the guy that you guys put your name to and attach yourself to. Tisk.
What makes you think he's sitting there?
My king would never do this.
Yeah. Okay. He's sitting there in his lazy boy and drinking his. What we decided that was probably some scotch.
It was
some tequila and those jaundice eyes of his. He's telling stories about this guy and that guy and this guy. And, you know, he did this, but then I ended up winning. And, yeah, he tried to show me up, but then I'm the GOAT and all this. Why do you think that we have to get that weird recording from 20 seconds that, again, sounded like something from a very cheap recording device?
Was that Michael Jordan's voice?
I don't know.
Turn the music down.
I have no idea.
Is this Michael Jordan's voice?
I know
voice?
What Jordan sounds like. I can't tell you for sure that was Michael Jordan's voice.
And when they called me to ask me to bluff, Rob Thorne called me and said, Rob, I won't play with Isaiah Thomas on the team. He assured me, he said, you know what? Chuck that one, Isaiah. So Isaiah's not going to be a part of the team.
I have no idea.
Okay.
I have absolutely no idea.
I just want that's you guys'
Come
favorite.
On, you know that's him.
No, I'm not sure if it is.
That's you guys' favorite athlete of all time. That's you guys' favorite basketball player.
He's the greatest basketball player of all time.
A dishonest individual. You know who I cheer for? Pure champions. People that did it the right way. People that uphold morals and values. People like LeBron James. People like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. People like Bill Russell.
Who averaged 15.1 points per game.
More and more, I'm starting to think about it. Mike might not be in my top five for all of this stuff. It's just, I just don't know what's real anymore. You talk about a house of cards with Lance Armstrong. This documentary was a house of cards. He wasn't a good teammate. My dog Horace is still hungry from when he wouldn't let him eat on the plane.
That was kind of messed up.
Scotty was broke for 13 years. Mike never came to his help.
Well, that had nothing to do with him.
Never came to his help. This is sick, man. I can't believe you guys support this man.
I can't believe.
Not me. I'm done.
You can't
I'm
separate.
Selling all my Jordans today.
I'm not. First of all, you're not going to do that. Yes, I do.
I'm selling them today. Size 13. I'm selling them.
I'm not.
This isn't something I can support. I can't wear that logo on my flesh anymore.
Okay. Why don't you separate
sick.
The man from the player? Like, I feel like you now have too much information and too much insight into Michael Jordan, the human, instead of the basketball player, that you've taken away from what he did on the court. Why does literally all the things that you bring up matter?
I don't know what he did on the court anymore. I don't know which of it's
you
real.
You saw it. You don't think the ball going through the hoop was real?
You just heard him say that, and you're not sure. We just heard the audio, and you said you don't know.
Maybe.
So you can question your ears, but I can't question my eyes. That's what you're telling me?
Yes.
Okay, my bad. I don't know if any of that happened.
Did we go to the moon?
What else are we going to find out now from Mike? More lies? Every day there's a new lie. That's not what I want. I'm done.
No, you want contrived. You want every time he talks into a microphone with a camera in
the
front
truth.
Of him
I want
to make
truth.
Everybody your best friend like LeBron James has done. Or you could just be an assassin like Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant and not care if everybody likes you, but they're going to have to respect you.
I just
Both
want
those
the
guys
I just
significantly
want the truth.
Better.
I just want the truth. That's all I want. Coming up in 20 minutes.
You can't handle the truth.
That's all I want is the truth. He's lying 35 years later about stuff no one cares about but him and Isaiah. Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll be joined by Hall of Fame pitcher Tom Glavin to talk about baseball's return. But coming up next, we'll take a trip inside the mind of the machine. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive, coming up in 10 minutes. Don't turn that dial. We will be joined by Hall of Fame pitcher Tom Glavin. We'll be on the show coming up in 10 minutes. Before we catch up with Tom, let's take a trip inside the mind of the machine.
So Fesco said, or actually I saw him tweet yesterday, that his neighbor was mowing the lawn at 8:30 in the morning.
It's a great problem you don't got to have when you live downtown. Well, this never happens to me.
What is an acceptable time for one to start their activities in a neighborhood? Let's say mowing the lawn, or if they've got kids, dribbling a basketball.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. It's my house, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I have something to do maybe later in the day and this is the only available time, I'm supposed to not cut my grass. So
I would
other
hate
people...
to be your neighbor.
I'm asking
you're the
honestly.
Guy. You're the dude that would, under your theory, you would blast music. You'd blast bass, a Millie, Lil Wayne at 3 a.m. because you were busy until then, and it's your house, and that's what you wanted to do. No respect for the neighborhood.
I'm asking honestly. So let's assume you're like us, where during the day we go to work and we have to be there by a certain time. Mm-hmm. So this maybe is the only time that I have free. What am I supposed to do in this scenario? I have to wait for this arbitrary time to take care of my lawn to make other people feel well? Like, I'm not trying to be an a-hole in this scenario. The grass needs to be cut. I'm going to cut it. I can't cut it at night. It's the only time I'm going to cut it. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. Now I got to wait till 11:30 to make other people feel good? Get up. Wake up.
So there's no cutoff. So if they were doing it at 6:45 in the morning, that's their problem.
I think so.
I literally moved out of an apartment one time because the construction behind me, beep, 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 started at 7 a.m. And I complained to the construction people, and then I complained to the building, and then I just said, hell with it. I didn't pay my rent, and I moved out. That's unacceptable. And the correct answer is 9 a.m.
I'm just saying, within your music analogy, there's a way for you to turn down the music and still listen to it. Like, you don't need it to be at a 50 decibel. Like, you can turn it down and you can still enjoy the music. There's no way for you to quietly cut your grass. Are you going to come over and then cut it for me? So if I can only cut it at 8 o'clock, but that's against this code here, is somebody from the neighborhood going to be like, hey, you know what, Bob? You know what? Hey, to look out for everybody else, I'll take care of it. No, I got to cut my own grass here. So I'm going to do it when it's convenient for me to cut it.
You're a jerk. Rob, celebrity birthday time. Kanye's birthday this week.
Ooh, I'm going to say Kanye is 44.
I was going to say 45. I'll go 45.
Say 43.
Ooh,
he's 43.
Right on it.
We were on it.
Kate Upton. This one surprised me.
Yeah, she's young.
She is young. She's much really younger young. Than I thought. She's been in the game once since she was like 11.
Yeah, no.
She started modeling like 19. I'm
yeah,
doing the math.
She's young. 31.
I'm doing the math. Hold on. 19 started, 8 years. I'll say 27.
She's 28.
Damn.
She's 28. How about Elizabeth Hurley? Remember her?
Yeah.
She's on an island somewhere.
Bedeviled, that movie with Brandon Fraser. I think she's in that movie.
Brandon Fraser. I haven't seen him in a while either.
She was in one of the Austin Powers, right?
Yeah, she was.
Which was 15 years ago.
Yeah, no, I just trying to think of what she
67.
Did.
67.
Like, who do you think made a movie more recently? Brendan Fraser, Elizabeth Hurley, Pauly Shore, Sinbad.
Sinbad. I mean, if you're counting stand-up specials. He has one right now on Netflix.
How old is she, Rob?
I'm going to go a little younger in care. I'm going to say 58.
She's 55. I don't know why you guys are aging my girl. Bill Burr also turns 52 years old. Are
I
you
really
a Bill
like
Burr
him.
Guy?
He's funny. I like him.
One guy to go. Bill Burr, Daniel Tosh, Aziz, Louis C.K.
I've actually never really heard a lot of Louis C.K. comedy, but I don't like Tosh.0 at all. Like, it wasn't very funny to me the couple times that I watched it. I mean, I'm picking Louis C.K. because he's a pervert, mm-hmm. but I'm picking Daniel Tosh because I haven't really heard a lot of things from him that I thought were very funny.
That's fair. I would probably get rid of Tosh also if it comes just down to stand-up. I love Aziz. I saw Aziz when he came through KC. He's hilarious.
I like movie Aziz way more than stand-up Aziz.
I actually prefer stand-up Aziz myself.
What movie is he good in? I think he's just okay in movies.
He's been funny the couple times I've seen him and stuff. I mean, he's not, you know, slap your knee, fall over in your chair funny, but I've enjoyed him the couple times I've seen him. I liked that show he had on Netflix. I liked that show.
So we were talking about The Hangover, speaking of overrated movies. The Super Bowl Hangover is a very real thing, but not for the teams that win, usually for the teams that lose. Is San Francisco in any danger of having that happen to them this season?
I still love their roster. I love their coach. I think their quarterback is adequate. They can run the football. Great offensive line. They added weapons this offseason and can play defense. Maybe they're not going to be the one seed, but I'd be surprised if they miss the playoffs.
Yeah, you're a much bigger believer in San Francisco. I think they're good. I think they're 10-6, a playoff team. I'd be surprised if Jimmy gets back to a Super Bowl in the next few years.
You only like two teams in the NFL, the Chiefs and the Cardinals.
That's true.
See, I know.
That's true.
Oh, and Pittsburgh. My bad. I don't want to discredit Pittsburgh. It's weird to me that you like Pittsburgh but don't like so many other teams.
Pittsburgh's just I think that they're going to be better than they were last year. I don't actually like them.
Okay, my bad.
And I don't actually like the Cardinals. It's more lust. It's more infatuation. I love me some Chiefs, boy. I love me some Chiefs. We were talking about coaches. The great Eddie Sutton passed away over the weekend.
R.I.P.
Who do you think has a better hoops program, Oklahoma State or Oklahoma?
That's a really good question. Oklahoma.
How could it not be? I mean, just the superstars they've had.
Yeah, Oklahoma. And they've gone to the Final Four, what, two times in the last 15 years? Yeah, Oklahoma.
I mean, Buddy Hield and Blake Griffin and Trey Young.
Remember Hollis Price?
Hollis Price. Good call.
Went to the Final Four with him. Yeah, well, I go Oklahoma.
If we're talking...
Oklahoma State's been good, though. Remember they had those years with John Lucas?
But again, that was a long time ago. No. That was back in the Austin Power days.
Yeah, I mean,
Powers. Who's got the better basketball program?
They always give KU fits for whatever reason. Anytime KU goes down to Stillwater, it's always a close competitive game.
I got more. Better program. Basketball. Iowa State or Baylor?
Baylor. I mean, Baylor's still sustaining it. They had a couple of down years, but I kind of feel like we undervalue Baylor. I feel like we undervalue what Baylor has accomplished, and we overrate the talent that they get.
I think Baylor's the most underrated sports program. If you're just talking about the big school, like the big money sports, basketball and football, Baylor almost played in the national championship game, or could have, in both sports just this past season. As I had Preber on the radio, both sports, they had a chance. Yeah, Baylor, nobody talks about them, but that is a great athletics institution. On the basketball court, better program, K-State or MU? Yeah, I said it.
Kansas State recently, Missouri historically.
I like what you did there. Sit the fence. You're an MU guy. 610 Sports Radio, home of K-State Sports. Makes a lot of sense.
I mean, right now, it's not close. I mean, they just won the Big 12 2 years ago. So, I mean, right now, I would say it's K-State. I don't really think it's that close. If we're talking, like, the history of what both teams have accomplished, I think Missouri's been a little bit better than K-State.
19 years ago this week, the Kansas City Blades folded up shop. Rob, did you ever go to a Blades game back in the day at Kemper?
I did. I don't remember anything about it other than I went.
C-Dot? Okay, never mind. We move
you
on.
You weren't key demo.
What?
I figured I'd ask. I mean, you were a Kansas City kid. Maybe, you know, you end up there with a friend. I'm not saying you and your mom and your sister went. That blew my mind. Did you ever go to a Comets game?
No.
Okay.
No.
You never saw Kia play or Gino Schiraldi?
What the hell is a Kia? Dun, 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 you mean the dun, thing dun, that Blake dun, Griffin dun, jumped over?
No. Kia was a soccer player with long hair. The Comets, and I wish I was making this up, for a 3-year period.
You can't make fun of Rob for FC Cincinnati if you're naming people that played
on the Comets. Oh, yes, I can. Yes, I can. Because back in the day, they used to draw 12,000 people a night at Kemper Arena for 3 years in a row.
In 83, yeah. They were really popular in 82. They were really popular when your list was a thing. When
I would say it was
the
like
list you had today?
I would say it was 87, 88,
89. I was born in 88. So which is, the Comets have never been relevant since I've been alive. I'm no knock to them. I'm not that excited about it. I'm not watching it.
You never went to Kemper Arena and saw that flaming soccer ball come in from the ceiling? And
I'm not that hot about real soccer.
Okay.
I'm now supposed to be excited about fake soccer?
All right, well, then we'll talk about something that you know before we get out of the mind of the machine. Basketball. You like basketball, right?
Basketball is my favorite sport.
So you like the NBA?
I like the way they dribble up and down the court.
We're talking basketball. There was a Twitter argument. I don't know how. Who's the better offensive player, Steph Curry or James Harden? Please weigh in on such argument.
Who was arguing this? It's Steph Curry. It's not really that close.
I mean, James Harden does average, 8 points a game more in his career.
Yeah, he takes 12 more shots and he fakes fouls to get to the free throw line. And they have a completely different system that allows him to dominate the ball. Yeah, Steph's a better offensive player. Harden's great. Don't get me wrong. He's not the offensive player that I think Steph is. I don't think his game's as well-rounded as
his numbers are so ridiculous. Like, you look at the leading scorers in the NBA, it's around like 29, 30 points. Then you got James Harden at 37 points per game. It's crazy. And you are now outside the mind of the machine.
Keep it locked in. Coming up next, we will be joined by Hall of Fame pitcher Tom Glavine. Tom Glavine will join us on the show next to talk about baseball's return. Tom Glavine next. It's The Drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive. Thanks so much for listening on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. We are very happy to be joined by our next guest. He is a 10-time All-Star. He is a World Series champion in 1995, and two times he won the National League Cy Young. He was also inducted into the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame in 2014. We welcome on Tom Glavine onto the show. Tom, really appreciate you coming on today.
My pleasure. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good. Let's start with this. We're in Kansas City. You have a relationship with Ned Yost. Tell us more about him.
Well, Ned was awesome. He was a guy who
gosh, I guess 1986 told me that my fork ball in the minor leagues was terrible, and I needed to learn how to throw a changeup. And it kind of devastated me at the time because at the Double A level, lots of people swung at my 58-foot fork ball. But he was the one who told me nobody in the big leagues is going to swing at that pitch, so you need to learn how to throw a straight changeup. So that was some pretty good advice he had for me there. But he was great. I mean, he was around us in Atlanta in a number of capacities, most notably as our third base coach for a long time, and just a really good baseball guy, and was thrilled to death when he finally won a World Series there.
I was just going to ask you that. You know how hard it is to win a World Series. You won one back in 1995. What is it like to kind of know that grind, know the road to get there, and then see Ned go on, have what happened in Milwaukee, but then find his groove here in Kansas City and eventually win a World Series in 2015?
No, I mean, it's gratifying to see it, especially for people you know. And then, you know, knowing the grind, having been through it, knowing that, you know, again, in Ned's case, came close, came up short, and then ultimately was able to win it there in Kansas City. So, I mean, I think it's kind of the double thing, so to speak, to where, A, you know how hard the grind is, B, you know how difficult it is when you came close to get back there and ultimately get that chance again and then do it. So I was, like I said, I was thrilled for him and thrilled for his family as well.
Right now we're talking to 10-time All-Star, 2-time National League Cy Young Award winner. He was also inducted into the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame in 2014, Tom Glavine. So we wanted to have you on to get some stories and also talk about Major League Baseball's plan as we get closer to the baseball season restarting. Let's start with this as we get closer, and I think we'll know something within the 7 days. What do you make of the plan between the players and the owners?
Well, look, I don't know a ton about what's going on at the moment. I mean, I know obviously there's been a lot of back and forth, initially on the safety protocols and things that, they're going to try and implement to keep everybody safe and healthy. And obviously that's been an important part of it. And I know they focused on that aspect of it first before they started having the discussions about the economic side of things, which I think everybody knew could get contentious. So, look, I think both sides understand the importance of getting baseball back to the country. We people in the United States, we want our normal back, and part of our normal is we want our baseball back. And in order to do that, they're going to have to come to an agreement to make that happen. And we're hopeful, like I said, that cooler heads will prevail. And we'll be able to get that done.
Do you feel like, Tom, the players have maybe been unfairly blamed or maybe cast in a poor shadow so far? Obviously, we don't know exactly how this thing's going to play out, but I saw a quote that you were talking about. The players are at risk to be the ones to take the blame. Do you think maybe they've been cast in unfair shadow so far?
Well, look, I'm going off my own experiences. I was involved as a player rep for a number of years. I was very heavily involved in the 1994 strike. I was involved as a player, not a player rep, in the 1990 lockout. And any time there is a work stoppage because of economics, the players are the easy target. It's just the way that it is, like I've said to people so many times, in 1994, we went on strike because the owners wanted to implement a salary cap, and we didn't want a salary cap. We just wanted to keep the free market system that we had, and owners, you pay us whatever you want. We didn't ask for any more money. Yet the prevailing argument with everybody was, well, how much more money do these guys want? And like I said, in actuality, we never asked them to pay us any more money. We, in fact, said, listen, if the system ends up being such that you pay us less money, then so be it. It's a free market system. So that's what we were trying to protect. And I think in this case, it's a similar situation in that when economics get involved, people are going to, naturally, I think, look at the players and think that the players are being greedy. So it's just an easy target. I'm not saying that places any more pressure on them, so to speak, to do something that they don't want to do or agree to something they don't want to agree to. Because at the end of the day, again, as I've said, it doesn't really matter who wins the PR battle, because if there's no baseball, they all lose and the game's going to lose. And there's not a question in my mind that if baseball were to not play this summer over economic issues, it would be very similar and maybe more significant than the fallout from fans in 1994 after the strike. And I think it's because, again, people don't want to hear about it. And particularly at this stage, with everything our country's going through right now, if you're going to tell people they don't have baseball back because of economics, they're going to be extremely disappointed in the game, and the game's going to lose. So, like I said, at that point in time, it doesn't matter who was right PR-wise. Everybody loses.
Tom, you make a good point about back in 94, you guys were fighting against the salary cap. Part of me thinks that the owners play here, and I'm curious to get your thought on it, that they're going to use losing revenues, fans not being able there, that they're going to use this as a way to implement a salary cap. Do you feel like that's possible given the economic struggles that both sides are having right now?
Well, I mean, I think that's essentially the biggest fear that the Players Association has, and rightly so, is because when you start talking about revenue sharing, or splits of revenue between the players and the owners, that was the essence of the strike in 1994. The salary cap was based on a sharing of revenue. And that's a hot-button issue to players, and it should be. But obviously the Players Association, many of those people obviously were part of some of those labor negotiations, understood it. You know, Tony Clark was a player during those times, so he understands what we fought for. So it rightly so, they should be concerned about that. And, you know, obviously there's going to be a concern that, hey, if we do it for this 1 year, it's going to open Pandora's box, and they're going to come back and they're going to ask us to do it again somewhere down the road for a longer period of time, or to say, hey, you agreed to it once, so what's the big deal if you agree to it and that becomes the system now? So, you have to understand the Players Association's fears and trepidation when you start talking that way and using that language in terms of revenue sharing proposals amongst owners and players. I mean, that's a hot button, you know, the silver lining in the strike in 1994 was that labor negotiations in baseball have been great ever since. Who would have thought you'd be 20 plus years without having some sort of work stoppage in baseball when that was the norm every time there was a collective bargaining situation that came up? So that was the silver lining. But given that, there's still a level of distrust between players and owners, in particular when you start talking about revenue. And while we may be talking about, you know, a revenue-sharing situation, it's still a dicey conversation to sit down with the owners and have them define exactly what revenue is.
Hall of Famer Tom Glavine joining us on The Drive. Did you think that that's essentially what Blake Snell was trying to say, but you just articulated it a whole lot better? Because personally, I was kind of offended. I think a lot of people were, not necessarily maybe with the words that came out of his mouth, but the way that he said it. Did you have any problem with what Blake Snell said a couple of weeks ago?
I mean, I have a problem with it in the sense that you want to talk about why players lose the PR battle. That's why. I mean, that's the poster child soundbite as to why people don't like the players and think players are greedy. In a situation like this where you have millions and millions of people who have lost all kinds of money, have lost things that they've worked their whole lives for, and would jump at the chance to go back to work for $50,000 or $60,000 so that they can save their families and save their lives, to hear a player say that it's not worth going back to play for $7 million, that rubs people the wrong way, and it should. Now, if he was trying to say, listen, we had an agreement with the owners in March that said we were going to get paid prorated salaries, then that's a completely different thing. I don't think there's any question that what he said turned a lot of people off, and like I said, is the kind of thing that makes players easy targets. But it's the kind of thing that, you know, like I've said many times, too, when it came to 1994, this is a different situation because there was a lot of animosity in that situation, and both sides were fighting and bickering over everything. And any time a player said something that was not necessarily in line with what we were doing, the owners latched on and would dig their heels in, and the same was true for the players. So I'm not saying that this kind of thing makes anybody dig their heels in a little bit, but I think it's certainly the kind of thing that it sets the process back. You know, it doesn't do anything to help advance the ball, so to speak. So, you know, I just caution players, if you're going to say something in the midst of all this, understand the turmoil that the country is in right now and how sensitive people are, because there are a lot of people that are losing an awful lot, be mindful of that and just try to keep it positive and keep it to, hey, we're doing everything we can to get back on the baseball field. We want to play. Because, like I said, I don't know how anybody, how any average American citizen who's going through what they're going through right now would listen to what he said and not be offended by that.
Exactly. Tom Glavine joins us on The Drive. Two-time Cy Young Award winner, Hall of Famer, 300-game winner. Speaking of that, Tom, before you get out of here, 300 wins. I mean, that is just such a ridiculous number. And we know with all the specialists and the fact that guys don't go 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 innings like they used to back in the day. Do you think that a 300-game winner is a thing of the past? Do you think we're going to see that again?
No, I don't. I mean, I'm always hesitant to, you know, never say never, so to speak. But I think it's about as close to us never seeing it again in our lifetimes, unless a lot of things change. You know, whether it's a lot of factors, right? I mean, guys don't make as many starts nowadays as we did. And you know, really, my generation didn't, compared to, say, the Nolan Ryan generation. So, you know, the decreased number of starts every year makes it tough. The decreased opportunities for starting pitchers to win games makes it tough. You know, there's so many games that those of us that won 300 games won because we were still in the game in the 7th, 8th, or 9th inning. Those opportunities are being lost, and not always because of a pitcher's poor performance. A lot of times it's just said, hey, you went through the lineup twice. That's great. We're going to move on to our bullpen now. And it almost becomes the norm rather than playing it by ear on a nightly basis. But, you know, that you couple all that together with the fact that is, you know, I know guys throw hard today, but I think the bigger issue is guys in today's game are max effort guys across the board. And in order to win 300 games, you're going to have to play 20 years. And I don't see anybody staying healthy long enough to play for 20 years in today's game with the way they exert effort on a nightly basis on the mound. I just don't think their bodies are going to take it.
And that is 10-time All-Star, 2-time NL Cy Young Award winner. He also won a World Series back in 1995. He was also inducted into the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame in 2014. Tom Glavine. Tom, it was an honor to have you on our show today. Thanks a lot for coming on.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great day.
That is Tom Glavine joining us on the show today. Funny, we mentioned Blake Snell in our conversation with Tom Glavine. He just signed with Scott Boras to be his most recent client. If you're trying to get the bag the way that Blake Snell was trying to do, signing with him is certainly a good thing to do. A couple of things that happened while we were talking to Tom Glavine. This is from Paul Feinbaum's Twitter account. Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott on the level of concern that not all teams in his conference will be able to play football this year. Quote, at this stage, I don't have that concern. So that's from the commissioner of the Pac-12. We know due to some of the rules when it comes to colleges in California, that's certainly been a topic of conversation in college football. This is in line with what we were just talking about with Tom Glavine. The Major League Baseball Players Association is very disappointed with the Major League Baseball owner's economic proposal today. Sources tell me and Ken Rosenthal, calling for additional cuts proposed massive. League offered to share more playoff revenue, but on balance, those dollars are small compared to what players give up. That's what the Players Association agrees. Two things from listening to Tom Glavine. I was listening to a podcast over the weekend, and it was Jeff Passan. He went on with Ryan Russillo. And Passan made a really good point that pre-social media, it was easy to keep everybody in line. It was easy to tell Bryce Harper, hey, don't talk to the media. But now when you got Twitter and Facebook and Twitch, think about it. The two comments that we've seen have been from Twitch. Blake Snell was on Twitch in the middle of the night and Bryce Harper commented on it. So when you have all these different media outlets and platforms in which you can voice your opinion, it's easy to get one person that gets off message. And now that person becomes the voice for the entirety of the group, where that's different whenever Tom Glavine was negotiating those things in 1994. And I think what's happening with the Major League Baseball Players Association is baseball union has been told its entirety, you don't leave money on the table.
Think about it. We always feel like NFL players leave money on the table. They don't get guaranteed contract. Basketball players, they leave money on the table. They have a hard salary cap, that there's a limit to what LeBron James can make every year. There's a limit to what Giannis can make every year. Baseball players have been told, you go get every single dollar that you can. I don't know if that's going to be feasible in this scenario. So I think they're trying to negotiate with old tactics. I just don't think that's going to work here. And if they're going to want to have a baseball season and it start on time, they're going to have to leave some money on the table for the first time in a very long time when it comes to their negotiation with the owners.
It also shows you, C-Dot, that as strong as the baseball players union is, and it is ridiculously strong, they can basically do whatever they want, and it's much stronger than any union in any other sport. It comes down to who's the mouthpiece, who's the one that's speaking for us, because really what Tom Glavin had to say was no different from what Blake Snell wanted to say or what he was intending to say. He just sounded like a jerk. He just sounded like a bigot. He just sounded like somebody who was spoiled that doesn't understand what society's going through. And Tom Glavin, and maybe it's because I keep pointing out he was the president of the Players Association, and he is, what, 20 years older than Blake Snell? So maybe that's it. But when it comes down to what they were saying, it was essentially the same thing, which is the same thing that you're saying right now. Baseball players are not in the business of taking less money than they think they can make. It's kind of like anybody in our society. You're worth whatever somebody's willing to pay you, and baseball players are saying, hold on. You said you're willing to pay us this, and now you're not. They're all saying the same thing, just some say it better.
Yeah, and in this scenario, baseball's strength comes from the fact of they've been willing to miss games, and they've been willing to miss important games. So has the NBA. I mean, we've seen two lockouts here in the last 30 years. We saw a lockout in the early 2000s, and then we saw a lockout in 2011. Basketball players have been willing to miss games. Therefore, in exchange for missing games, they've gotten more leverage because they've been willing to show the owners, we won't show up to work. Football players are never willing to do that. Football players, the moment they tell them it's time to go back out there, they go play football. And that's why they don't have the strength that these other unions have. This is the one time that the strength needs to be, we can't fight for every single dollar, because I do agree with this. You know me. I'm always going to be pro player. I'm always going to be pro, get as much as you can from the billionaire owners. They are going to be the ones that get blamed for this and not the owners. If they don't play baseball on time, when we're starting to open things up and people starting to be willing to go outside more and people are now craving live sports, and Rob brings up that we're seeing live sports happen in other countries and the NBA is going to start and the NHL is going to start. If baseball doesn't start when they say they're going to, the blame is 1,000% going to be on the players. It's not going to be on the owners. People are not going to blame the owners. That's not what the American public will do. They will blame the players and say that they were greedy. That's not a fight that they can win. So I think that behind closed doors, someone has to tell them, this is the first time that we can't get the whole pie. We can get 80% of the pie. We can get 85% of the pie. And the next time when things are back normal, we can then fight for 100% of the pie. But this is the one time we got to be willing to lose a little bit, and the owners got to be willing to lose a little bit, and we got to be on the same page. Because every other American sports league, the owners and the players appear to be on the same page and moving in the same direction. That's not what's happening in baseball.
And as Tom Glavin pointed out, from our perspective, from the fan perspective, it doesn't really matter who wins out, right? It doesn't really matter who's got the loudest voice. We just, as the fans, want baseball back. So is there going to be a blame game of sorts that if we don't have baseball and all other sports are back, this is the players' fault? Yeah, this is the owners' fault. Yeah, but to some extent, it's just going to fall on baseball. So it doesn't really matter who wins or loses this particular fight, because I'm not on either side. I'm not on the side of the millionaires. I'm not on the side of the billionaires. I'm just on the side of, I want baseball back.
Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll be joined by Dr. Dana Hawkinson. He is an infectious disease expert at KU Medical. We'll talk to Dana Hawkinson about sports trying to return and what he thinks about all those people that were down at the Lake of the Ozarks. Before we do that, it's a little bit different, but it's Tuesday, so that means it's time for a Tender Tuesday.
Now, usually with Tender, we're going to have a very unique Tender Tuesday today, boys. Carrington, earlier today, you showed us, and I want to get the name of the show correctly, it was Ultimate Tag?
Yes, it was Ultimate Tag. If you guys haven't seen this, it comes on Fox, J.J. Watts, the executive producer. It's basically modern-day American Gladiators. It's fantastic. I loved it. I watched the episode on Hulu yesterday. Oh, it was great. I can't wait for the next episode. You should watch. If you like American Gladiators and American Ninja Warrior, you need to watch Ultimate Tag.
I feel like you're disrespecting Turbo and Nitro and the great Gemini and Blaze.
Watch this show, I'm telling you.
It's not as good as American. I haven't seen it, but it can't be as good as American Gladiators. I did catch the Steph Curry mini golf extreme challenge thing. Pretty good itself. I'm not going to lie. Not too shabby.
I like American Gladiators more, but this Ultimate Tag is pretty good. And it's American Gladiators-esque.
Okay.
Well, speaking of American Gladiators, you guys are going to swipe right or swipe left on some things we saw in the aforementioned American Gladiator. Sean.
What kind of Super Nintendo music is this?
This is the American Gladiators outro. Fun fact.
Goodness gracious.
I'm pretty sure this is Mega Man, but okay.
I've always turned this off when this music came on. I've never heard this
music. No one stick through the credits, what we're learning today.
Never.
Sean, the wall from American Gladiators, right or left?
Yeah, because I didn't care if Gemini's real name was. I didn't really care that Turbo's name was Steve. I was done with the credits. What, you want to know the wall? Swiping left or right, would I win? Yeah. I think I'm swiping to the right. If this is me and C-Dot going head-to-head on the wall, then yeah. Now, if I got somebody chasing me like they had on the actual American Gladiators, then no, I'm swiping the left. But again, nobody chasing me head-to-head with C-Dot. He ain't making up the wall, so yeah, I'm swiping to the right.
Life's about knowing your limitations here. I'm swiping left because I know I'm not climbing the wall. No interest in climbing the wall. My upper body strength don't really work that way. No.
Did you ever go to Galleons on 119th Street and
climb the wall?
Look at the face C-Dot's making. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about right now?
I mean, I've heard of wall climbing before. I don't know what Galleons
is. Same concept.
And nothing would make me think that it I've driven to 119th and Metcalf to climb the wall.
It was
Galleons.
Great. It was free. It was a sporting goods store. It was phenomenal.
Climb a rock. We continue on American Gladiators Tinder Tuesday. Sean, would you win if you took part in Hang Tough?
Hang Tough.
What the hell is Hang Tough?
That's the one with all the rings, right?
Oh, correct. That's another upper body strength game. That's a swipe left. Any game in American Gladiators that requires strong upper body strength and peak physical condition? Left. No, I can't do that. Those were the worst games anyway.
He ain't lying. You know the part at the very end when they do that hand bike thing? I mean, I want to pass out just sitting at home watching that. No, I'm with C-Dot. My upper body strength's not really my thing. Like, if you made me do one pull-up to save my life, I'd just say go ahead and bury me. So, yeah, no, I'm swiping the left on whatever that one's called.
What about the Joust, Sean? Would you swipe left or swipe right on Joust?
Well, I'm swiping the right on Joust. Again, if I'm going head-to-head with C-Dot, there's no question. Now, you can put me in the red corner, the blue corner. Remind me, in the American Gladiators version, what did you fall into? Because if you fall into water, then C-Dot's going to do everything he possibly can not to fall off, so he's probably going to win. But if it's a foam pit, then yeah, I'm going to knock C-Dot right off. So I'm swiping the right once again.
I mean, I'm swiping right on Joust because, come on now. Sean is 5'7". You think he's messing with my reach in the Joust? Come on now. You know that you would lose in this. There's maybe some of these games that you would beat me in. But this
solid
game
foundation,
is not,
though.
It's not one.
I have a solid foundation. Tough to move.
No, I would hit you in your flip-flop and you'd go falling.
All right, boys. Last one here because up against the clock. Sean, would you win or lose in the Eliminator?
Oh, I wouldn't even try. I don't even like.
So that's a loss.
Yeah, it's a loss. I don't even like normal. What the hell are those things called that you run on but don't go anywhere? That's how often I work out.
Treadmills.
A treadmill. That's how the thing begins. And it's at an incline just to lead me to that hand bike thing. And then I got to swing through the air. No, I'm good. I'm swiping to the left.
I don't even want to answer the question. I just want to point out that you perfectly described a treadmill without knowing what it was. What's that thing that you run on but you don't go anywhere? What's that thing?
Yeah, they're ridiculous.
Yeah, the treadmill is the name of it.
What's the name of the stationary bike if you're so damn smart?
The Peloton?
Well, yeah, I guess it is.
Coming up in 5 minutes, don't turn that dial. We'll be joined by a real live breathing doctor. His name is Dr. Dana Hawkinson. We'll talk to him about all the people that were down at the Lake of the Ozarks, what that means for the rest of us that were not at the Lake of the Ozarks, and we'll talk to him about sports as it's trying to resume here in the United States. We got a living, breathing doctor on the show coming up next. It's The Drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.